We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This week, my guest is Philip Yates, CEO of Equiliberty and chairman of Impact Hub Houston. Philip, who is also a practicing lawyer, shares a bit on his background and how he evolved his career in law into becoming an entrepreneur in the tech and startup space to create his fintech platform, which is expected to launch in early 2025. Philip and I also discussed the Houston innovation ecosystem and what it meant to him to accept the award of Ecosystem Builder at the 2024 Houston Innovation Awards. Philip, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Natalie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we have so much to talk about. I've been wanting to get you on the podcast now for a while, and we have celebrated you last fall as the Ecosystem Builder at the Houston Innovation Awards, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But for those who don't know you, can you give us an overview of your background, your career as a lawyer, and then kind of leading up to how you transitioned into this entrepreneurship innovation space?
Absolutely. And thank you again just for all the work you've done in terms of creating this platform and allowing people like myself to be recognized. Again, it was a great, great honor and great experience. For those who don't know me, I'm a Houston native. I was born and raised in A-Leaf, Texas, which is the southwest part of Houston. Grew up there, and you know, it was a diverse community where you had, you just had all experiences from race, from socioeconomic classes. And so I felt like going into college, which I went to school in Nacogdoches at SFA, played some basketball. But that's where I really just kind of honed my craft of service. While in college, taking some of those experiences growing up, knowing that everybody's not dealt the same deck, same hand from the deck of cards of life. I started just getting involved in service. Did it through, business opportunities, through different organizations, and eventually became an attorney. I went to Texas Southern University, Thurgood Marshall, came out. I knew that I wanted to still be able to be a servant in the community. But I had to pay the bills. And so by way of my practice, I became a corporate and bankruptcy lawyer. And to this day, I still have some corporate and bankruptcy clients, but I cut my teeth in economic development work at the Houston Area Urban League. And so I don't know if you know that, Natalie, I started there and created a program called Small Business University alongside the president and CEO, Judson Robson III, and Eric Goody, the senior vice president. And that's really when I got a closer look at people in the startup and idea phase of entrepreneurship, knowing that one, entrepreneurship is not for everybody. Everybody's not meant to probably start a business, but there are those who, one, by necessity have to be entrepreneurs. And then there's others who do have what it takes, but then they may need additional resources because it goes back to, upbringing, knowing that because they may have been from a certain community or born to a certain family, they may not have all the tools at that current time to reach their financial goals. And that's kind of what got me here. So, those experiences as a corporate attorney in bankruptcy, where we deal with a lot of debt matters, it really prepared me so that I can help people in those early stages, form their ideas, form their teams, and understand what the journey looks like. And then kind of caution them on some of the, the pitfalls of a small business, where there's liabilities or troubles that you have in terms of building a business. And so, yeah, that's where we have it. And then over the years with Small Business University, as I was doing that and I was building capacity in terms of building a family and securing my own financial future, I had more resources that then kind of test theories in terms of why don't certain entrepreneurs or wealth builders have equal access to capital. We have equal access to mentors that are able to support them, or sometimes even access in terms of physical access you know, in terms of being able to get inside certain rooms where they can receive the opportunities and benefits they may need to grow. And that's when I started Equal Liberty. Have my cousin, who's a co-founder, Rachel Howard. And then I actually picked up another co-founder, picked up like it is a journey. But a good friend of mine who grew up in A-Leaf, Cody Bailey, he became a co-founder just 2 years after we started. And ever since then, we've been just really growing our team of supporters, volunteers, and trying to do impactful work.
Yeah, it's such an interesting career overview that you've just outlined, because it's both parts like you attaining your own like professional success, but then also sharing with others and helping others in the lessons you've learned personally, and then giving out that information freely and at will to everyone. It's so inspiring. And I think that now that you've talked a little bit about your background, can you dive in a little bit more to Equal Liberty, both the original mission you had and how you've grown and executed on that mission and evolved that mission?
Yeah. And I hope when my wife hears this, that she doesn't, you know, kind of bark at the idea I've been giving away this information for freely, because she's like, no, you need to be charging. Are you a lawyer? You went to law school. But no, she's obviously, you met my wife before and she's along for the ride, and she's my partner in life and also partner in business. So shout out to Chelsea Yates for allowing me to do this work. But to answer your question, Equal Liberty, I was actually introduced to the concept from a family member of mine. He knew the path I was on and what I wanted to accomplish. And so he introduced me to a guy by the name of Louis Kelso. And Louis Kelso is a lawyer by trade as well. And he's also an economist. And he created binary economics. He's most famous for helping usher in the ESOP, you know, the employee stock ownership plan that allowed, you know, employees to have ownership and companies to become more productive. But as I was studying binary economics, it was a theory that, you know, you can take a community of people and you can say, OK, look, make sure that everybody equally has enough production or output as well as being a consumption. And so it was like just a balance, like an equilibrium balance for business purposes. And so looking at communities where, you know, whether it's African-American community or Hispanic community or just people from, you know, lower middle class or lower class, they're consumers. And so how do we equip them to be producers? And so that's really the theory, without taking something from somebody else. And so, you know, in theory, you're basically trying to accelerate the growth of the economy, but making sure it can be distributed at a faster pace. And that's where Equal Liberty came in. I said, okay, well, we're kind of doing that, whether it's the work I'm doing at the Urban League or the work I do in my practice or all these amazing organizations that are already ecosystem. But how do you speed up the growth of that process and then make sure it's equitably distributed to those who want to become producers? And that's basically where Equal Liberty was born from. So I kind of married my two passions together. It's a made up word. I've seen it out. You know, obviously, I trademarked as an attorney, but it's equilibrium with liberty. So it was my balance of business and law. And how do you put those together to make sure that everybody can pursue their purpose or their passion, mainly being their, you know, their wealth building goals? Like any founder, I've had some bumps in the road where, you know, I'm not a technical founder. Obviously, I have the legal practice and legal mind to draw the structure. But in the tech space, that was foreign to me. Through that journey, I was able to get some developers and, get burned because maybe they're not who they say they are. And that's okay. And I was in the early stages. And so we had to go through trials just like every other team. And now we have a great set of, developers that we work with through our CTO team. But more importantly, I think one of the highlights of Equal Liberty since we started was getting the bank to back us. And so roughly in 2021, after the pandemic, we were talking to JP Morgan Chase. And so Sherry Green, who's a local community banker, vice president, and done some amazing things throughout the city of Houston, had just really, her and her colleagues came to my office. They talked about the vision for Equal Liberty, what we want to do. And then we said, hey, let's start something called Black Entrepreneurs Week to get people out of their homes after the pandemic and back into the economy. And actually, I know you helped out even covering the story back then. So thank you for that. Just always all the great work you've been doing over the years, because, you know, as you said, 4 years later, now you're getting the ecosystem builder of the year, but it doesn't work without great people like yourself and Michael and the Gal Media team, giving people a platform to highlight their voices or amplify their voices. And so just kind of speeding it up, Natalie, that was a highlight because we are a fintech platform. And as we talked about convening the ecosystem, we're able to now use data to tell the story to those financial institutions that basically want to get in front of their customers. And so we've been able to do that. Then we created Latino Entrepreneurs Week. We're in the talks of doing Asian Entrepreneurs Week in the month of May. And then our goal is to have one big one for the city. So all of these are basically roadmaps or bridges for those who may be not seen, overlooked, or underappreciated to have a way into the economy. And then you create this huge platform for all people in the city of Houston and all around the country if we're able to, fortunate to expand, to now have access to capital and resources they need to build wealth. So we're excited about it. We're going to release our technology in Q2 of this year, and we're looking to commercialize it by the end of this year. So that's one of our exciting. And then really, how do we go into other markets that have now seen what we can do if you just celebrate culture, celebrate community, celebrate our differences? But more importantly, let's give them opportunities to be wealth builders. I think people are starting to look at that. You can do this without taking it from somebody else. And that's really where the whole premise of Equal Liberty started. And we hope that it goes.
I love that message. And I think it's such a great reminder when you think of social impact innovation, it's not as maybe of a direct line to executing on that. It's such a great reminder of how nonlinear developing a social impact innovative product can be. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about the tech platform itself. And I know it's coming soon. It's probably not completely done yet, but tell us what people can potentially expect from the platform itself.
Yeah, I like the fact you said it's nonlinear. I mean, even the setup of our organization is not traditional. I mean, we recognize ourselves as a social enterprise. And so our Equal Liberty Corporation houses all of our technology, and that's where all of our developers do the great work they're doing, led by our CTO. And then we have programs and services through our foundation work. And we were intentional about that because, again, we wanted to disarm the community with this notion that, that you can have a platform where everybody can just basically be ushered into the economy, or at least the start line of the economy. And so to your question about the technology, we want the tech to support our program. So having programs like LEW and BEW, where we touch thousands of people who are interested in the work we're doing, we're now going to integrate those services. And so people, whether they're entrepreneurs, whether they're small businesses who want to engage, they'll have direct access to digital marketing opportunities, whether it's geofencing, geocoding, which will put them in front of their consumers. And in turn, return for that, that'll give a benefit to making us being able to have more resources to share with the community. Also, we have different programs that are built into the app, which will allow them to start their journey. We've wealth building journey. We've discovered, really through our work over the last 3 years, that you really can't put a title with someone's race or their gender. And so that's where it's really important that we use zip codes to make a determination. So you'll be able to use your zip code to determine what type of resource you need. And we have data that's from the federal, state, and local level that's going to be making, which is going to be through AI and machine learning. But two, we find people at different parts of the journey. And so you'll find some people that have been in business for years, they're doing well, but now they're trying to figure out how to leverage their assets to acquire, or like myself, I'm an older professional, but I'm still looking for either angel investments, venture capital. Well, I'm not the same as somebody who may be at the beginning in the idea phase. They may need more attention, different attention. So the tech is going to be able to do all that and then facilitate the growth of that community year round. One of the things we didn't want to do was have a program like LEW, where that's the first time somebody learns about, the Impact Hub or, any of these other great organizations that are basically standing up our ecosystem in the city of Houston. And then they're like, okay, what do I do now? How do I navigate? Because that's a lot of times what events do. And so we want to use the tech to kind of facilitate their growth and then measure it using data and then hopefully put them in front of the customer or bank or institution they need in order to continue their wealth building journey. So very, very excited about it. Like you said, it's done, but it's testing. So we're going to have to get the bugs out. We know that we're going to have our growing pains, but we're excited about getting to that part of the journey.
Yeah, it sounds like this year will be one of launch and finishing up the final testing and getting it out there for people. And then hopefully in 2026, you have a product you're growing and not launching anymore, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to talk about Impact Hub since you mentioned it. I know you have a leadership role there. So for those unfamiliar with Impact Hub, tell us about that organization here in Houston and what they offer and what your role is at the organization.
Yeah, big fan. And obviously, I have a front row seat as the chairman of their board for Impact Hub. I've been with them for a couple of years now. It's led by Grace Rodriguez, which I always call her OG. Because she is one of the original just innovators and entrepreneurs in the startup community here in Houston. And also she has her executive director, which is Michelle Avalos, who is younger, but doing some phenomenal work throughout the city. And we have a great board and team that work outside of the Esperson building. You know, anybody who's a social entrepreneur like myself, I think Impact Hub is the place you want to be. That's where it started. It's a global organization that has different, I guess, local nonprofits throughout their city. So one of the benefits of joining Impact Hub, it's kind of like having a 24-hour membership gym. I tell people, it's like you're still wanting to work out even if you travel. And so if you have that membership at YMCA 24 hours, you can go visit that local one. You can do the same thing with Impact Hub. Well, here it also makes sure that you have the resources to grow. So it is membership based. I've been a member since its inception, and it's a great benefit because I know that if I ever have an issue or I need consult or I need to be a part of a program, I can go to Impact Hub. And more of a leadership role, they recently was awarded the MBDA Capital Readiness Grant. And that is a huge opportunity for the city of Houston because it allowed Impact Hub to create a consortium or ecosystem of organizations that kind of help you go through the capital stack. And for those who may not be familiar, or may not understand, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, when you're starting out the journey, you're going to, you know, who you go to get loans or get grants or get investment varies as you continue to grow your business. And so with that MBDA Capital Readiness Grant, they're now in position to allow entrepreneurs to come to the Impact Hub, get the training they need, get prepared for loans or grants at the micro level, commercial level, VCs, angels, and then help push more people through our ecosystem. So really excited about that program. I know it's going to be around for at least 3 years. Then they have the Adidas grant for those who are social entrepreneurs that you can go through that incubator and anything else. Man, just go to our website at impacthubhouston.com and then feel free to reach out to me. I would love to connect with anybody and make sure that they get the resource they need to grow.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love hearing that kind of update because I remember covering Impact Hub as it was launching in Houston. And so it's so cool to see what Grace and Michelle and you have done to really provide all of those resources for people.
They got Organization of the Year. We got to make sure we throw that out there. We got to give a shout out.
thank you for that because I would not have remembered to bring that up. But yes, another award recipient. You were on stage twice that night accepting awards. So I do want to talk a little bit about. I love when people are and type of professional. So you have this career as a lawyer and you have this career as a social impact innovator. So tell me a little bit about how the two complement each other, especially in your work with Impact Hub. Like, what do you get to bring to the table with your background and how has it been beneficial?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, when the work of, you know, all of the key players that have brought resources to our tech and innovation started around, I guess, 2016-17. I know it's like a task force, the mayor, the ION, and then I know the Gao family's done some great work and et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of people, so I don't want to go into the name game. But I kind of shifted my practice to make sure that I understood how to serve tech founders. And so, you know, from, you know, making sure they're incorporated in Delaware, that whole process, moms agreements. I mean, anything you can think of, I wanted to make sure that I could cover it. And so I started actually serving tech companies. Most of them are startup, and as you know from your interviews and your work in this space, some make it, some don't, and that's okay. That's just a part of the process of any entrepreneurial journey. But I was fortunate enough to get retained by a company by the name of Direct Digital Holdings, And so Direct Digital Holdings is located here in Houston, their headquarters. They have corporations in Austin, Georgia, California, and they do business all across the world. And so I became their general counsel. And that was probably a pivotal moment for me as an attorney that lent itself to this tech and innovation space, because it accelerated my career journey and accelerated my learning process in terms of how to be an attorney for a tech company. And so in 2023, they actually went public. And so they were only the, and this is all African-American or majority African-American owned company. And that was like only the eighth or ninth time in the history of the stock exchange that an African-American company had went public. And then I was able to be a part of that team that did so. And so having that experience, it allowed me now to be able to share those experiences, whether it's, you know, pitfalls or things that you need to be prepared for if you're trying to grow a tech company. And so it allowed me to do that at the Urban Link program, through Impact Hub, with Equal Liberty, BW, LAW. And so I say all that to say that my career as an attorney allowed me to evolve as a professional and be a credible resource for people who needed to list, whether it's free, as you said earlier, or if they need to retain me, or I can create programming around real situations that occur when you're going that far. I think a lot of times, you know, you can be a good doer in the world. You can have a heart that says, I want to solve this problem. But if you don't have the true experience or you don't have the resources to be able to invest in somebody, I'm not saying you're going to be a disservice, but it may be counterintuitive. And I think through my experience as a lawyer, it allowed me to be as a greater service, at least that I'm capable of being at that time.
Yeah, that's amazing that you saw this opportunity early, you know, because it's been a few years since all of that happened. So you saw an early opportunity and jumped in on that. I think that kind of really nicely segues into talking about Houston's innovation ecosystem, since you have been a part of it for a while. So when you think back of how the ecosystem has evolved, what are some standout wins for you or any other observations you've had? And leading into the new year, what do you expect to see?
Yeah, thinking back, so my experience and what I would say the ecosystem came before the 2017, but it was just, you know, small businesses. You really didn't think of startups until that time. And so because I was working for a nonprofit that, you know, created their program based off necessity, I remember when I had homeless people, I was teaching business and, you know, I would feed them. And then I was like, pretty sure you're just here to get the meal, right? But that's okay, because you never know what they may do with that knowledge. Some may go on to be successful. Some may be able to impart that on their, you know, their niece, nephew, son, daughter. It's, you know, somebody in their lineage. But it evolved over time. So like maybe 2 or 3 years after that program started, you started seeing professionals that had the choice to say, hey, either I'm underappreciated or I'm undervalued, or I just want to make more money, or my legacy needs to be through entrepreneurship. And you kind of recognize that as the people that were coming to the program. And then when the ecosystem really, truly started being built, we talk about innovation. You saw those people who were capable now trying to start tech companies. And that was the first like just light bulb in my head that, hey, here you have this engineer that left this great engineer job to start this let's say fintech company, and all they need is a resource. And so as I start seeing things come online, one of the things we tried to do was start a venture capital fund, and we got it off the ground. It was Diversity Fund Houston, and then we even had an LP in Bank of America at that time, but it just wasn't the right time as a first time fund manager. But that was a win in my head because the ecosystem was being built, people are open to like, how can we bring more resources here? And me going through that experience now, if I ever want to do it again, I understand how to stand up a VC firm. So that was probably the first win. But then other resources started coming online with accelerators. And then you had different communities being built. So now everybody who left this program that once was being entrepreneurship by necessity program, they had somewhere to go. So I would see people who graduated from Small Business University. Now they're operating on these huge stages, whether it's at the Canon, whether it's at ION, whether it's at the Esperson. And so for me, it's like now you have a true continuum of people who are dedicated to their craft. They now have a place to go. And that was the second win for me. Obviously, you know, talking about what I'm doing through Equal Liberty, it's like, okay, now how do you celebrate those or the culture of those? So that they feel welcomed into those spaces. And that's where you have the EWs, the LEWs, the YWs, AEWs. Like, you still want people to stay true to how they operate at their business and be able to walk into the Canon, the Ion, the Esperson building, NASA, whatever other, you know, spaces that we have, and still be able to bring that product or service from the community. And so that's where we're at. I think those are all wins, because that's truly what the ecosystem's about. I think we, you know, we still need obviously more capital dollars, but I think that's going to happen once you increase the density of prepared entrepreneurs. And that's the work we're trying to do to make sure they're prepared in every single way. And then looking forward, I just, you know, I think because you look at the growth of Houston and you look at the population and that, okay, you know, at this point in time, we're probably the most diverse county. We're one of the most diverse cities in the country. And so it's a big experiment that if we can figure out how to continue to grow the ecosystem, what everybody's celebrated and everybody has an opportunity to build wealth, I think that's going to be the win. And that's where I see the future. So with Equal Liberty, we're hoping to continue to be that lever that says, hey, let's keep getting more people through the door. Let's keep getting more people in the pipeline and continuing. And then let's figure out how far down the road do we need to identify milestones and resource opportunities that we can bring into the fold so that nobody falls between the crack, nobody falls in the gaps, and that nobody takes their ideas and their opportunities to the grave. And that's what we've seen in the past due to just, you know, just systemic issues that need to be alleviated that have been, but we still have more work to do.
I think it's, I want to like narrow down to talking about one thing you brought up, which is density. And I think Houston has a particular challenge with that because it is such a big city. We have a lot of things happening, but they happen sometimes in industry silos. So how does Houston solve its own density problem? Is it through use of the internet? Is it through maybe like doubling down on those niches? So, you know, there's specific parts of Houston that have their own niche density, because that's kind of happened. You know, you mentioned NASA and the Texas Medical Center. It's like those little areas have high density. Or is it like tapping in to connecting those parts of Houston through the internet, maybe?
I think it's all the above. From my perspective, Houston has a great economy. I think nobody's gonna argue that. But I think in order to manage the growth of the ecosystem with the growth of our population, we have to make investments into those communities that traditionally don't know about those industries that are, you know, energy and oil. I mean, if you said the medical center, science, natural sciences, I think we need to make sure that more people have an opportunity to participate in those ecosystems. And then there needs to be more investments into the entrepreneurs that maybe they don't know about those industries because of cultural differences. And so if you know, there's studies to show that, I mean, those in the Latino community are more than likely to start businesses from problems that they experience culturally or from ideas that they experience culturally. And that's the same thing with the Black community and so on and so forth. And so if you have the majority of your population is, you know, either Black or Hispanic, but mainly Hispanic at this point in time, I do think there needs to be more platforms where you allow growth in those communities. And that takes a little bit of intentionality. And so that, you know, it kind of goes into the D&I conversation, but I hate for it to get lost into a political discussion when there's nothing wrong with celebrating cultural differences, making sure that people who come from a certain zip code or community, their ideas are celebrated, but they're also introduced to new opportunities. So they know that, okay, well, you may be starting this food business, but that you know that this industry is over here, or that there's opportunities over here, and that just there may be a more, you know, better case for you. And also, how do you prepare those entrepreneurs that maybe didn't go to certain schools or don't have the financial means to grow a business, but they have the idea and they have the wherewithal and they have the ability, but they just need a little bit of backing. So I do think Houston's going to have to be more intentional. And I think you can do that through partnerships. I think that's obviously what Equal Liberty stands for, is that we know we're not here to do everything. And we believe that Houston's doing it right. It's just that how do you convene the market so more people can get involved in that process, so that when we look 10 years down the road, the ecosystem at large looks like the population in which it serves.
As much as I love that about Houston, I think there's an inability to connect the business benefit to it. Like, there is a business benefit to having a diverse city. Like, we know that. But I wonder, like, how do we get the message out instead of just like blindly throwing out this stat, this, oh, we're the most diverse city, and really translating the benefit to the residents here, to the local, state, national economy? Like, how do we make that message, I guess, clearer?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And I think it's a question that all stakeholders have to ask themselves internally, and then somehow figure out a way to work together on that, because it needs to be amplified, right? And the way you amplify that is if the banks understand they have a role in diversity. The government understands they have a role in diversity. The nonprofits, NDOs, startup organizations, they have a role. And the startup and the entrepreneurs all have a role. And how do you get them all to work together? Because we can keep screaming diversity, but until we have more wins of people who look like the city of Houston, and there's a, you know, a correlation of a parity, I think, then it's almost like you're just really, you're saying it, but what you're basically doing is saying, okay, yeah, we're the most diverse city, but the ones who are successful are the ones that are pretty much aren't the diverse, they're not a part of the diverse population. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with continue to uplift the people who are there, who are ready, who are prepared, who can continue to kind of participate in the growth of the ecosystem. But I think in order to amplify the message, it's going to mean going to bring in more intentional resources to support those people who need help getting to that stage. I mean, I think one of the things I get frustrated about a lot is if I walk into a room that has programming around tech and innovation, and I see the same faces. And it's like, that's great, but is that a good investment of time, resources, and money? Or we, if you highlight that one person who now has the energy to kind of be the jockey of the message of D&I, and so you want to put them on things, but how do you make it so that you can reach into, again, I don't know, where we have 7.2 million people, I think, in the greater Houston area. And so that's a lot of people that, more than likely, there's a percentage of them all don't want to be a W-2 employee. So how do we make that investment? How do we corral that community? How do we make sure they have a pathway to get the resource and track it using data? I think when you have data behind it, because we've done the studies, and I get tired of probably hearing people do diversity or disparity studies. It's like, we know it exists. It's like, it's right there in front of us. You can pull the census data. And then obviously there's other data that we can correlate with it. But I think now is the time that, knowing where Houston is going, how do you make the right investments? How do you have the proper programming? And then how do you track all those companies or those individuals to make sure that we can say we have a percentage of people that is higher than anywhere in the country of diverse backgrounds, whether it's because they're women, whether it's because they're African-American, whether they're Hispanic, Asian, whatever the case may be, but it's a direct correlation to our city population. And that's what Equilibrity is here to do, is to help out, because we believe that everybody deserves a chance to build wealth. No matter where you come from, no matter color your skin, the creed, religion, et cetera, everybody should have a chance, because that is really pretty much our American birthright.
And it parallels Houston's innovation ecosystem as a whole. It's like, you know, when people of color have wins, it shows how Houston is the place to do this, how any background can accomplish these things. And it's the same thing with Houston's innovation ecosystem, where once we start putting wins on the board, people are going to take notice. Like, we can build it and people can come, but we also need to show that the success is happening to really kind of make that difference. So I think it's funny to me that it really parallels exactly what you were saying.
I'll give you a real-time example. I mean, I think I've heard about, you know, innovation awards for the last so many years, and I never got a chance to attend because of this calendaring, and I never had a reason to attend. I just knew it was a great event and so many people wanted to be recognized. And that's the great thing about building a platform like you've done, the Gal Media team. But once I was recognized, I saw the difference between the people who reached out to me to see, okay, that's a win. Okay, and here you have an African-American founder who's done these things, and I've had so many meetings. I have people reach out to me. I have people who now want to work with me, people who are investing in me. That's because of this platform you created. And now you've given a win to somebody who traditionally may not be seen as the win in that space. And now you can see the growth. And so that's just like I said, it's minor, but no, it's not minor. Honestly, it's a great win. But that's to the point of what you're saying, that if Houston continues to put win on the board, and it's not because, again, they're, you know, because you're trying to force a Black person to be up there, or a woman to be up there, or Hispanic or somebody from diverse. no, there's people out there that have been putting to work. Because I mean, I understood that, you know, my background and my experience, that I'm deserving of it. But also, it's good to be seen. It's good to be recognized, and especially in spaces traditionally that, again, I wouldn't have seen myself be recognized. So, again, I think that's the prime of a good example, and I can see the return on investment. I think it's also great for Houston also.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I cover all the different stories all the time throughout the year, but it's when the awards come around that I get to see all the faces, right? Like the people who are sending in their headshots for the different articles we come up with for the awards programming and stuff. And I'm like, it's always great to see the diversity there. It's obviously throughout the year, it's there. That really kind of boils it all down into one room for me. So let's talk about the awards. And, you know, I will tell anyone, this is not a secret. The Ecosystem Builder Award is one of the most competitive awards, one of the most competitive categories. And this year, we had like phenomenal nominees, our finalists last year, and then this past year, same thing. So it's always a fun category to meet those different people and remember some of those different people. So Ecosystem Builder being established to honor somebody who's connecting the dots in Houston, which, as everyone listening to this episode has seen, you do. So what did it mean for you to take home that award at the Houston Innovation Awards this year?
Yeah, I imagine it's kind of like how Will Smith felt when I was going to do a Will Smith joke. I'm joking. My wife's going to kill me for trying to bring that up. No, but I would say, honestly, it definitely was gratifying. Right? I don't need awards to validate me. I mean, I've done enough work and I'm accomplished enough, but I did not think I was going to win. I told my wife, I was like, we're just going. It's going to be a great experience, but you know, I'm going to boo whoever's ever out there. So just join me in the booing, and then we'll run out the back doors. And obviously joking, but to go up against one people I respect and I admire. That's the first thing, because you said it's very competitive. And so I've known about people who put their name in the hats. I've known about people who talked about it for years, but then seeing the nominees alongside. All of them are doing amazing work. They're people I've worked alongside, people who've invested into my career. And so that was the first thing. You know, you kind of appreciate a award based on the competition, because you just, I mean, although I like YMCA trophies when I play basketball, this is something that is validating because you're alongside your colleagues. But two, as I mentioned, I think it's one of those things, you're taking on an award for other people. I mean, I know it's about me, but I don't do anything alone. I've always had a team. I've always had supporters. I've always had communities. I've had people who've kind of uplift or amplify my message, like yourself. And so when you get that award, it's almost like, okay, look, this is my way of showing appreciation to you, that through your investment, I am being acknowledged. And that means that I am doing the work and that we are seeing some kind of return on investment. Then three, I think it's somebody else looking up. And I'll say up because I do think it. Like, you know, Joey got the award. And I think Joey's a phenomenal human being. And I've always known Joey to be a phenomenal human being. So to follow behind Joey getting that award, that means I'm going in the right steps. But that also means that there's going to be somebody behind me, whether it's, it's going to be some Houstonian that's going to say, hey, Philip got it. I can get it. And maybe this is the way to do it. And they'll maybe look up in the bio, or they'll hear this podcast. And they'll say, okay, I'm doing something similar. Now, let me make sure that I apply for the award. And so, yeah, it's a win for everyone. But I do think it definitely changes my trajectory. And I think, you know, platform that you've created, as it grows, I'm hoping whoever comes in your shoes knows that that's what it does for people. And so I'm hoping that all those people I reached out to, now I have a bigger network I can work with to continue to do the great work that Equilibrity is doing, that I'm doing individually as an ecosystem builder, and hopefully just continue to push the innovation ecosystem forward, alongside my other colleagues.
Thank you for saying that. And I also want to note, like, draw the parallel, because you mentioned Joey, who won it in the year prior. Both of y'all are both ecosystem builders, like you're contributing to the Houston startup and innovation ecosystem, but you also are both entrepreneurs. And I think that's an important, you know, acknowledgement for the Houston community that, you know, you can do both. You can build your own business and contribute to the community that's helping you build that business. So it's a great reminder. So I appreciate you bringing up Joey, because yeah, both of y'all are two for two on doing both and being both. So, well, thank you so much, Philip, for joining me. on this podcast. I'm so glad to have gotten to record this with you before I move on. So thank you again for making the time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you again for all the work you've done with Innovation Map. I'm honored to be your last guest. So I look forward to sharing this with my community. And obviously, best of luck on your journey. I know you're going to do amazing things, and I hope you stay connected. But thank you again for the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.